After weeks of speculation, U.S. President Donald Trump has confirmed that Rick Perry, his energy secretary, is quitting. Trump made the announcement on Thursday, saying he had known Perry planned to resign for months. Perry has become engulfed in the unfolding impeachment inquiry against Trump. The White House on Thursday confirmed that Trump had directed Perry to work with his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, on Ukraine policy.
Saudi Aramco is gearing up for a blockbuster share sale. Next week may see the world's largest oil firm announce plans to float a stake of up to 2%. If that doesn't sound much, it could still raise $25 billion or more, making it the largest ever IPO. That is an indication of just how big Aramco is. It's hoping the deal will value it at $2 trillion.
The EU and the UK agreed a new Brexit deal on Thursday. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson called the deal great and urged UK lawmakers to approve it. Johnson ally and leader of the lower house of parliament, Jacob Rees-Mogg, also praised the agreement and said it keeps the UK in one customs union. Johnson now faces the same difficult task of getting his deal through the UK's parliament on Saturday. He'll need 320 votes to get it ratified. If that fails, another Brexit delay could be on the way.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN, Friday, the 18th of October, 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for getting up with us and joining the show. I'm Bennett Wakenight in for Steve Grzanich today. We'll be wrapping up the week talking about portfolio, business news, financial news with Paul Nolte. He'll be kicking a few stories around along with Brian Summers, our aviation expert. He'll be chatting with us a little bit later in the program as well. So we've got a full show for you today. Nothing to be shy from as far as financial news, business news, and your questions. So if you can get those in, if you have questions regarding finance, portfolio, investing, feel free to text those in. 312-981-7200. We'll be taking those after the first segment, right around 524, 525. Text those in and we'll be trying to get to those, and Paul Nolte will be helping out with that. So we'll be checking everything as far as business, but as far as money and money futures and markets, let's check the Associated Bank Market Desk for today on October 18th. Dow futures, oil futures, NASDAQ, S&P, mixed board across, unchanged for the Dow futures. S&P is just barely in the green, 0.75 up, and NASDAQ futures down nearly 6% over in Europe. Mostly red across the board. The FTSE down nearly 12 points, the CAC down nearly 25, and the DAX up about 11.5. And as Asia rounds things out for the week, mostly red across the board as well. Shanghai down 39 points. The Hang Seng down 128. That's nearly 0.48%. And the Nikkei up 0.40%. Will be mixed board across across money markets today. A few stories to kick things off. You heard earlier in the news there about Brexit negotiations and a tentative deal there. We'll be diving into that with Paul Nolte and seeing how that affects markets here and portfolios. But on the other side of the world, China's economic growth continues to cool off. China's economy grew 6% in the third quarter, landing right on the central government's full-year baseline target for gross domestic product, as business activity continues to deteriorate in the world's number two economy. Growth across the board cooled in the third quarter, despite some recoveries in industrial production and retail sales at the end of the quarter, according to the data published Friday by the National Bureau of Statistics. But investment in fixed assets, a measure of construction activity that has been long a major economic driver, but is becoming less so, was weaker in the first 9 months, with 5.4% raise from the year earlier. Shifting over to the commercial real estate world back here, WeWork could run out of cash by mid-November. They've been seeing a lot of tumultuous radars and things in their future. Just 9 months ago, WeWork was valued at $47 billion in a SoftBank-led financing round. Looking at an imminent IPO, the company also rebranded itself to We Company as opposed to WeWork. CEO Adam Neumann is now gone out of the CEO spot, and the company has scrapped its IPO along with the $6 billion debt financing that was tied to the offering. That means WeWork, which lost $900 million in the first 6 months of 2019, is poised to run out of money by mid-November. CBS reported this week. WeWork's biggest outside shareholder in JP Morgan Chase, its third largest backer and primary lender, have every incentive to keep the company going and alive, and also incentive here in Chicago, as WeWork is the city's largest tenant and or sub landlord, having over a million plus square footage in commercial real estate. As well, Illinois College Aid would hit records under Pritzker's economic plan. Governor J.B. Pritzker aims to make more state financial aid available to Illinois college-bound students than at any other time since the current program for such grants was created in 1967. In his economic plan last week, Pritzker proposed the state increase by 50% the amount it allots to the program over 5 years, bringing that total to about $600 million by 2023. That includes an additional $50 million to be added this year after the allocation remained unchanged at $401 million annually in the past two fiscal years. That increased allocation could go a long way in helping Illinois better compete to keep students at home as opposed to losing them to nearby states like Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, very heavy in Big Ten territory, which have been drawing away Illinois students in increasing numbers over the past decade. Illinois has had the past few years had a net outflow of students, with nearly half of who are headed to a four-year college opting to leave in the state. And with the number of colleges, universities, and state schools that we have just in the Illinois and Chicago area, that will be high on Governor Pritzker's radar as we look to for the future of the Illinois economic growth. Now we shift things over to our Friday feature, Paul Nolte. He's always with us, and he's kind enough to join us in the studio today. Paul, welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Bennett. Nice to be with you this morning.
Well, it's always good to be rounding things out on what seems like positive news. And I think the big headline this week and this morning is the tentative Brexit deal. So let's kind of break that all down. It's somewhat positive, but also could be mysteriously
Stop me if you've heard this before. Right. We have a deal. We're not quite sure what the deal is. It still has to make it through Parliament. We've done this three different times with Theresa May. We've had these deals with U.S. and China. We've got, those were announced last weekend. So it's almost like we've got Christmas. Both of those may be past us at this point, but both have huge hurdles. So we heard China walk back from their agreement over the weekend. We'll see and get the vote, as it was highlighted in the news section. We'll get a vote on Saturday, and it's by no means a certainty that deal gets voted, similar to Theresa May and trying to get her agenda through. Just because there is a deal doesn't mean that we're going to have a deal. So what's happening in the financial markets, though, we're seeing that come through in a positive way for the U.S. markets, certainly in Europe, and we're seeing it in the currency markets. The U.S. dollars come down a little bit. Euro and the pound have strengthened. They've been weak for most all of this year. So, again, from a longer-term perspective, if we're able to kind of quell some of these issues, and they're certainly very large issues, we could see the dollar weaken a little bit. We could see the foreign markets pick up, and we can see economic growth pick up globally. And that would be a big positive for the financial markets.
Right. And I think the big thing yesterday was the sterling that jumped up, like you mentioned. And that could be, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the times and opportunities for people to be jumping into those international markets again. If that's over in the UK, this might be the time to get it on the up. Of course, with all the uncertainty, though, nothing is set in stone.
Right.
But this could be one of those windows.
You know, the international markets we've generally have liked for a long time. They're very inexpensive relative to the U.S. For example, the U.S. market is selling at, depending on how you look at it, anywhere between 18 and 25 times earnings. And you take a look at the emerging markets especially, and there many of them are 10 or 12 times earnings. So they're about half of what the U.S. is. What we're waiting for is a catalyst to get those markets going, and China is certainly a large component of emerging markets. So we do like that. The second part of it is the dollar has been very strong. The U.S. continues to be, as we like to put it, kind of the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry. So for all the problems that we have, we're in a better position than most of the rest of the world. Our interest rates are still positive. Our economic growth, although slowing, is still better than what we're seeing in continental Europe and in Asia. So when we look at it from that perspective, the U.S. has been sitting pretty, and the S&P 500, as a result of that, has been the best asset class in the equity side of the equation all year long.
Right. And with that S&P performance and Wall Street in general, there was an interesting market graph coming from Aurora Report, and it looked back from 2012 to the Wall Street performance all the way up until now, and really trended and caught the performance of Wall Street compared to when Brexit began to mm-hmm. when it had its ups and downs to now. And what was interesting was it really didn't tend to dip at all. It was a steady upward progress. Do you think that was more the confidence of the Brexit deal eventually getting done, whether it was a phenomenal outcome for Brexit or not, or the confidence in the U.S. economy?
I think, you know, the S&P 500 doing so well is a combination of things. One has been very low and accommodative monetary policy. And the second has been corporate America. They've been buying back stock at a pretty steady clip and an aggressive clip as well, taking advantage of the low interest rates. Many companies borrowing money and buying back stock. So that provides at least a little bit of demand underneath the market consistently through. And that's part of the reason why we've seen the market do so well over the last 5 to 7 years. Valuations of the market are certainly much higher now than they were 5 to 7 years ago. So you had a little bit cheaper valuation. You had some room to run. The markets now, really over the last year, year and a half, have gone sideways in a fairly dramatic fashion. Remember Christmas. Mm-hmm. But from point to point, we're essentially where we were early in 2018. So here we are 10 months into the new year, and we're pretty much in the same spot we were almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah, got to remember that the market moves in those cycles, and it's always going to come back, and a good way to bite you or a bad way to bite you. But speaking of corporate America, earnings season is right now, mm-hmm. and we've had a flurry of earnings come in, mostly bank and financial performers that have been kicking things around in the market. Overwhelmingly good so far, right?
They have been. And, you know, certainly the biggest concern with the banks and the big money center banks, financials especially, have been interest rates. How are they going to deal with a low interest rate environment? One, two, has been the yield curve being very flat or inverted for much of the early part of the year. They came in extremely good, and a lot of it actually has been on the fixed income side is where they made their money. So they made their money of that and then trading. The banks that are a little bit closer tied to the consumer, so Wells Fargo as example, not as good as those that have a big trading desk like a Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley. So you saw that dichotomy in the banking side. But in general, very good from the financials. We saw a lot of industrial companies over the last couple of days report some very good earnings. So it's still very early in the cycle. We will, in about 2 weeks, hit the sweet spot of the earnings season, and we're going to see a ton of reports. But the early returns, at least, are good. A little bit too early to make the broad brush of the economy's doing fine, look at corporate America. We'll have that probably wrapped up a little bit better in 2 to 3 weeks, but certainly the early returns are good.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, SVP at Kingsview Asset Management, here with us talking business, finance, and the rest of the world as far as money and your money questions. So feel free to text those in, 312-981-7200. We'll get to a couple of those on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. We're checking things in. Things have changed a little bit in the U.S. markets. Dow futures looking up in the green, just barely green, 0.09% up. S&P just barely green, up 0.2%. And the NASDAQ up nearly 0.5%. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News Tech Trends. Now, when you buy a router, you can get a smart speaker, too. Google is rolling out its latest version of Nest Wi-Fi, formerly known as Google Wi-Fi. The company's smart speaker product lead, Mark Spate, says this new version will let you talk to Google Assistant.
So now you have everything a Nest Mini can do actually in the Nest Wi-Fi point. So you can ask it the weather, you can play music, you can do a broadcast and tell everyone come to dinner.
He says you can also get new devices called points that can boost the coverage in your home.
If you're a user and you say, you know, this corner of my house, I never get Wi-Fi. What you can do is you can get a Wi-Fi point. You can put it in that corner of your house and extends the coverage to that corner of a house. So that dead spot now becomes connected.
Bates adds it comes with a design update, too.
The devices are disappearing into the decor of the home, but the utility and the technology is there when their user actually needs it.
Nest Wi-Fi starts at just under $270. With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Back on The Opening Bell, Bennett Wakenight in for Steve Grzanich today. Paul Nolte, SVB, Kingsview Asset Management back with us. Quick text question before we wrap things up here. Paul, I have at least, from the 773, I have at least, correction here. No, this is one I'm looking at. Corporate bonds. What are corporate bonds? These funds seem to grow slower than other stocks. Are they safer in retirement? Thanks from the 815.
Corporate bonds are basically you are loaning money to corporations. So Microsoft, Apple, you're buying their bonds, and it's their debt instrument. So similar to U.S. Treasury, you're giving money to the government. You're loaning them the money. It's a bond that will mature at some point. You're going to get paid a interest rate as long as you hold the bond. And then when the bond matures, you're going to get your money back on those bonds. Mutual funds that own those or ETFs that own those, similar characteristics. So you're going to get a better income flow. They are not going to grow because there is a certainty of maturity. But they tend to be a little bit safer, a little bit more interest paid on those than on U.S. Treasury debt because there is a risk of default. Companies do go bankrupt. U.S. government has not gone bankrupt and has a printing machine in the basement.
Right.
Many of those companies do not. So there is a little bit more risk with those, a little bit better return. So they are not at all like the stock, the underlying stock, and trade very differently and act very differently. But look at them like a treasury with a little bit better return.
A little bit of finance 101 and plenty of other questions to be getting at. Unfortunately, we don't have time. So, Paul, how can people get in touch with you if they want a one-on-one?
They can always drop me a note. Happy to answer all kinds of questions at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue the conversation there.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Paul Nolte, SVP at Kingsview Asset Management, with us today, as he is with most Fridays. I'm Bennett Wakenight in for Steve Grzanich on The Opening Bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight sitting in for Steve Grzanich today. He is off the rest of this week. He fell sick to the nasty seasonal allergies and the last nasty seasonal sicknesses that are going around. So again, a quick reminder, use hand sanitizer and wash your hands. But anyway, shifting to the next subject, we'll be chatting with our regular conversation with Brian Summer. Brian Summers, senior aviation business editor at skiff.com, talking a little bit about some United news that's coming up, some good deals that are coming up in October. And Brian joins us by phone now. Brian, thanks for joining us and welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
good to be back.
It's good to have you on, and there's plenty of stuff going on in the airline industry right now. And let's kick things off with a local story with United. They're shifting things around a little bit with their fleet. I imagine this is in response a little bit to the Boeing MAX situation, but also something as far as, you know, moving their revenues and their profits ahead. They're shifting down or shifting up to larger jet size. Is that right?
Absolutely, Bennett. This is kind of interesting. United Airlines came out and said this week on its earnings call that it wants to fly much larger jets into the 2020s. And there's a very simple reason for it. When airlines use bigger airplanes, their overall costs, of course, go up, but the cost to fly each seat goes down. So the last regime at United, which left in about 2015, liked smaller airplanes for different reasons. And the new regime says that that put United at a disadvantage compared to other U.S. airlines.
So with that being the case, I think it comes back to people asking the question, who will see these larger jets as they begin to make this this rollout?
Well, larger jets in the markets where United feels like it can fill them. So Chicago would be a good bet for them, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. One reason United is very bullish on larger airplanes is because it has hubs in most of the largest U.S. markets.
Right.
So, you know, the third largest city like Chicago, number one like New York, you can pretty much put any size airplane going, you know, from Chicago to Denver, and you can fill it. There are some other U.S. airlines that don't have that benefit. You know, Delta Airlines runs a very good airline, but it has hubs in Detroit and Minneapolis. They're just not as robust cities as, say, Chicago, New York, and San Francisco. So you'll see these larger airplanes in United's biggest hubs.
Gotcha. So we'll be seeing that roll out over the next 6 years. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. And this will reduce United's costs actually quite a bit on a per-seat basis. So I do want to try to maybe oversimplify it for our listeners and just explain how this works, right? So one airplane, right, to operate one airplane might cost United $100,000 to operate. Airplane might have 100 seats, so its cost would be about $1,000. Per passenger on that airplane. If you doubled the size of the airplane, if you used a 200-seat airplane, your costs, of course, would go up because you're going to burn a lot more fuel.
Sure.
But on a per-seat basis, you're not going to spend double the amount of money in fuel. Maybe you'll spend 1.5 times or 1.7 times the amount of fuel. And so United will actually save money per seat. And I suppose that we could see a world 7 or 8 years hence where, because United is paying less money to operate each seat, fares could come down. But who knows?
Right. And but one of the fascinating things that that you wrote about in here is that United is, you said in the very first line of the article, no U.S. airline is on a better financial trajectory than United Airlines. And the fact that they're doing this now is the fact that they're going to be saving more money, and more money is going to be coming to their bottom line. I think that's the surprising part that, you know, people are maybe underestimating about United, or they've just kind of snuck along and had that in their back pocket.
Yes. Well, Bennett, we should caution our listeners. And one of the reasons that United is on such a great trajectory is because they were in such bad shape, you know, 4 years ago under the previous regime. It's almost surprising, you know, what shape United was in several years ago. I think passengers know it from the passenger experience, but just financially, you know, they were making money, but they were doing some, frankly, boneheaded things that the industry had moved past, and they fixed a lot of those, and United is in much better shape right now, and the stock is on an absolute roll.
Right, exactly. And I think people would agree if they bought a few years ago when they look at their stocks now. But that being the case, and let's kind of take a an objective perspective on this, you know, looking at Oscar Muniz's role within the company from the 4 years since he took over, what kind of grade would you give for him since being the new CEO?
Oh, this is a very complicated one. You know, Oscar came in without a great background in the airline industry. He is very good at things like marketing and employee relations. Customers like him, employees like him. He is the face of the company. He's out there meeting people all the time. But Bennett, I mean, you talk to people that work inside the airline industry, the people that are sending me DMs on Instagram, or, you know, text messages, and it is United Airlines president Scott Kirby who is running this airline on a day-to-day basis. Scott Gotcha. Kirby came from American. He was president there. He was president at U.S. Airways before then. The man knows how to run an airline. He's the one going out there and saying, our airplanes are too small. We have to lower our cost per seat. We have to change this. We have to fly to the right places at the right time. And insiders give him a whole lot of credit for changing the trajectory of that airline's finances.
Gotcha. So definitely can't be put on one perspective, one person's shoulders. It's more of a team effort, and maybe Oscar.
It is a team effort over at United.
Gotcha. Well, great. Well, moving on a little bit over to the other side of things, over at Delta Airlines, you wrote about a possible new subscription for passengers that may or may not include paying for extra overbin head access. Talk to us a little bit about that.
This is absolutely fascinating to me. Delta came out with a new subscription service this week where people can pay $59 to have Group 1 boarding for the entire year. Now, you read this and you think to yourself, my goodness, that is an amazing deal. Only $59 and you get Group 1 boarding? But people are pretty smart. Group 1 boarding on every airline, including Delta, is not really Group 1 boarding. It's like the sixth group to board.
Sure.
There are like five or six pre-boarding groups, and then Delta goes with one, two, and three, and then their basic economy fare. So you're going to be paying $59 for the entire year to board a little bit early. Now, I fly all the time. I believe that there's almost no purpose to board early. You're going to be on this metal tube for hours and hours.
Right.
Why do you have to get on the airplane 45 minutes early? People know this. There's really only one reason to get on the plane early, and it's to stow your bag in the overhead bin. So I did write that this deal for $59, while a good deal, is kind of a backwards way of saying, do you have overhead bin anxiety? Why don't you pay us $59 and then, you know, you'll have a better chance of stowing your bag. Now, I should mention that Delta did throw something else in here. I think that they're also offering 8 free drink vouchers, but that's the whole package. It's early boarding and free drinks. Some people like free drinks, some people don't. I'm going to go ahead and argue that this is a move about bin space and bin anxiety, which is a real thing.
Right. I mean, I can say from a personal perspective and from a consumer perspective, I get to the airport at least 2 hours early before any flight. Doesn't matter if it's a local or international. I have that airline anxiety. And I know a $59 number is a pretty attractive price as far as anything that comes to an airline when it comes to buying something as an extra. And if I know that I'm going to get an extra space or a little bit of peace of mind when it comes to this, along with 8 free drink vouchers, I think this might be a successful trend for Delta. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It could be. I still think that it's remarkable that we live in a world where people are going to pay $59 even for the year for priority boarding that is really like group 6 or 7, depending on how you count it. It's amazing.
Right. Well, you mentioned also in the article that previously there have been a handful of subscription models throughout the industry, but they haven't been historically successful. Could this be the turning of the tide, something that, across all the industries, subscriptions are something that many businesses are considering? Is this something that may be happening a lot more often in the airline space?
Yeah, subscriptions are very interesting, as you say, across all industries. All these companies love the recurring revenue, right? It just exists every month or every year, and you don't have to do that much to get it. I do think that we'll see a little bit more subscription-based products in the airline industry. It'll be interesting to see what they are. I mentioned in the story that probably the longest-running successful one is United's Economy Plus seating, so that's that extra legroom seat.
Right.
I get it for free as a frequent traveler, but if I wasn't a frequent traveler, I could buy it for the year for $599. Airlines have the same problem that a lot of businesses have in this sort of situation. People like to game the airlines, and, you know, a lot of folks may use their subscription 2 or 3 or 5 times a year, but there are always going to be folks that use it much, much more and try to game the airlines. It's fun for frequent flyers to do, and that's why I don't think we're going to see anything too rich coming out of airlines. I mean, just as a funny aside, we've seen a few airlines over the years, if they need cash, they'll do like an all-you-can-fly package.
Right.
And they always say, like, there are a few customers that basically try to put us out of business. We get on these airplanes every day. We don't understand it.
Yeah, well, perfect. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us again this week and today, and we'll keep our eyes peeled for those good deals out there.
Great. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Brian Summer, Senior Aviation Business Editor at skift.com, joining us every Friday talking about business news. And we chatted a little bit more. We'll chat a little bit more after the bell with Brian about why October is the biggest and best month to be buying flight tickets. So keep your pockets ready for that if you have a few flights coming up in the early next year. So we'll be shifting to that.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. The Wall Street numbers looking just barely in the red. Dow futures looking just barely on the other side of the good line, 0.03 down. S&P futures, same thing, 0.03 down. NASDAQ futures, 0.1 down. And oil and U.S. 10-year yield futures will be looking positive today. Let's now shift to latest on agriculture and commodities here with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Let me begin by repeating 2 stories on trade issues that came in yesterday afternoon. First of all, White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow said he sees momentum to finalize the initial phase of the U.S.-China trade deal that was outlined last week, adding that it may be signed at the Asia-Pacific Economic Forum next month in China. And then the other story, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said yesterday that lawmakers were getting closer to an agreement on revisions to the deal negotiated by the Trump administration with Canada and Mexico. The speaker said, quote, "I can honestly say that I think every day we are becoming closer. The issue is, do we have enforcement? We feel very good about being on a path to yes. We're not there yet because we don't have the enforceability assurance that we do need to have." And how many times have we heard comments like this from parties on both sides of the trade negotiations with Canada, Mexico, and the United States, as well as with China? Market-wise, wheat futures at a three-month high yesterday, their highest level in 3 months, as signs of rising global cash prices prompted a round of short covering in the wheat market. And in the livestock futures trade yesterday, we saw prices tending to move lower. The February lean hog contract down $1.40. The October live cattle contract up 5 cents a hundredweight. And the October feeder cattle contract down $1.17 a hundredweight. That's the agribiz story this morning. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. One more story for you here before we wrap things up. Ford Motor Company is going to give its future all-electric vehicle customers plenty of options to charge in their rides. The automaker says it will provide North America's largest public charging network with 12,000 locations and 35,000 charging plugs. And that includes fast charging station sites that will be installed by Volkswagen Electrify America. And Ford says it also partnering with Amazon Home Services to offer home charging setups. And Ford is planning to put more than $11 billion into electric vehicles by 2022. Now on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, Friday, October 18th. Earnings season continues to chug along with Coca-Cola, Acme United, and American Express reporting earnings before the bell today, while a handful of Federal Reserve speakers will make appearances all around the country, including the Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan, Kansas City Fed President Esther George, and Minneapolis Fed President Neil Kashkari. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Friday, October 18th. I'm Bennett Wakenight, standing in for Steve Rosanz today. Thanks for tuning in, and this week, stay tuned for the Steve Cochran Show next on WGN.